This is Stories from the Red Zone and Gear Review. And you are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
And I was running late, and it was a whole series of events that kind of that screwed me completely over.
So I get tucked in these trees, and this storm blows in, and just ba-boom, ba-boom, you know, it's just going all around me. Claps of lightning.
Like eight bears coming to it, even after Adam shot his.
It's 31 yards from where I sit. That damn buck walked through that trail cam and gave me the bird.
After that, it just went downhill fast. I was wore out from getting in there, and I was seeing bucks, and I just couldn't get to them. My mind wasn't right. My body was telling me, no way. My mind wanted to get there, but my body was saying no.
We throw out one bugle and hear five bulls bugle all around us in different areas. So we're just like, oh my gosh.
I look up and here's these five bulls staring at me like 150 yards away up in this little opening. And I'm like, oh man, just screwed this up.
Now.
Let's.
Get.
Into.
The show! In this episode of Stories from the Red Zone, my buddy Clint Casper hops on and he shares his New Mexico mountain lion hunt, which is an extremely tough hunt. As for the gear review, which are also up on our YouTube channel, don't forget to check those out. I review the Sitka mountain glove. I hope that you enjoy the show. Zach Harold here with my buddy Clint Casper on the podcast. We are going to do a couple stories from the Red Zone. And Clint has had, man, he has had some pretty crazy adventures and some pretty grueling hunts. So, Clint, thanks so much for hopping on the podcast. And which story are you going to start with?
Absolutely, my man. It's a pleasure to get back on. It's been a little while. I know we're both always busy and whatnot, but I'm pumped up to get back on, and I was excited to hear kind of what you wanted to talk about. I'm kind of a sucker for those tough, grueling hunts. I like to hear about them. I like to be in them. I like to do them, and I like to talk about them afterwards, just because it kind of brings back the pain and agony and the suffering. And it's a little easier to talk about now than whenever you're right in the mix of it. But yeah, no, I mean, first one that would pop to my mind would definitely have to be the New Mexico mountain lion hunt. Did it with my bow back in, it was 2015. And I had never been on a lion hunt. Grew up around, you know, coon hounds and stuff and rabbit dogs my whole life. So, I mean, I've been around hounds a lot, but never did any type of hunt with hounds for like a bear or lion or anything. And out in New Mexico, it's a dry land hunt. So, you know, there's not a lot of snow out there. So, it's a harder hunt in that aspect because you're tracking dry ground versus, you know, snow and wet ground where your scent actually will carry and stay a little bit longer on those tracks. So going into this hunt, I was told, make sure you're prepared to ride on horseback, which I'm not going to say I'm a good rider, but I mean, I've rode on and off throughout my life and, you know, been around horses, you know, grew up on a dairy farm. So I've been around animals since I was old enough to walk. And, so we get there and it's a 7-day hunt. And, me and my buddy both wanted to do it with our bows. We said we want to do it, you know, with our bows. And they told us right off the rip, well, there's not many guys that make it past day one with a bow still in their hand. And we said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, you'll figure it out. So, you know, we just kind of laughed it off. We thought, oh, you know, it can't be, you know, that bad to carry your bow around and whatever, you know, I mean, strap it to your pack or whatever you want to do and jump on your horse and go, you know. And so basically how this all goes down is, you know, there's a, you've got 14 or 15 dogs, and you cut them loose early in the morning, right at first light. and you're hoping to pick up a track, obviously, and then you're going to follow that. So, you know, you're talking anywhere from 20 to 30 miles a day you're going to be riding, which doesn't sound that bad until you actually get in it. And plain words, your ass is strapped to this saddle for 30 miles going up and down the nastiest, most rugged, disgusting looking country you can find in New Mexico. Rock chutes, canyons so thick with juniper and scrub brush that, I mean, a whitetail I don't think could actually get through in a hurry. I mean, just brutal. Day one, probably 2 hours in, we're riding along this trail, and there's a branch coming up that I could have ducked under, but I thought, man, I played football. I was a big badass linebacker. I'm just going to forearm blast this juniper branch and bust it out of my road with my forearm. So I got my bow in, I got my bow in one hand. I'm riding on this horse. We come up, and I know nothing about juniper trees and how they snap back, and you really can't honestly break them. So I forearm blast this thing and it snaps back, takes me off the horse. I fall down. I cut my head about 2 inches wide. I'm laying on the ground. I did save my bow. I got it on my chest. Not one scratch on my Matthews. Just going to throw that out there. I'm pretty proud of that.
So you fell off a horse.
I got when that branch come back, it took me clean off. Like I just got tackled out of midair. So my horse just stood there. It didn't run or anything. Almost like just looked back at me like, wow, you know, what a dumbass in plain words. So my guide comes up and he's like, oh, dude, you know, your head's cut open pretty good. So he pretty much super glues and like throws a few stitches in the top of my head. I had a bruised up rib pretty good because when I fell, the way my pack landed on my back, my water bottle, actually, I landed on that. So busted up rib, slit my head open, and this is on day one about 6 miles in. So, I mean, it was we're off to a hell of a start, you know? So
it's an uphill battle both ways.
Day one ends, never saw a cat, which is pretty normal. I mean, you can hunt 4 and 5 days and never actually see a cat. You know, you're just on tracks. Never really cut anything that was that great. Some old stuff, some old sign. Got in that night about 5 o'clock, pretty much ate a whole bottle of Tylenol. And I thought, well, day two is going to be better. You know, day one was rough on me, but day two is going to be better. My body's going to be a little more used to this. Day two, cut a good track about midday. And again, you know, on these hunts, I thought I could strap my bow on my pack and ride, but it's so thick. You literally have to hold the bow in your hand at all times. So if anyone needs to know like one or two ways out of 47 million ways to hold your bow on a horse with both your hands, I can do it. I can tell you how to do it because I've held that bow every possible way that could possibly you could hold a bow. I did it 20,000 times. I mean, that's all day you spent switching arms, you know, putting it on your shoulder, putting it down by your side, putting it in your lap, holding it with one arm, bending under branches. I mean, it's just that in itself was a hell of a workout, let alone being strapped to the top of a mule or a horse all the time. But so we cut this good track on day two. We get probably, I don't know, 20 miles in following him. That night, same thing. Body-wise, I mean, I'm sore. I'm beat up. I mean, it's not getting better. It's actually getting worse. I'm thinking, man, oh, man, like this is going to be a tough hunt. I mean, I'll be honest, tougher than I thought it was going to be. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, you know, you're going to have to saddle up, like, you know, no pun intended, but all right, Clint, you're going to have to saddle up and really dig in deep if you want to punch this tag because, I mean, you know, basically, the more miles you cover and the harder you're able to go day after day, the better your odds are of finally catching up to one of these cats.
Yeah,
so,
makes sense.
Day three and four, we probably put 30, 35 miles in. We were lucky enough to be able to pick this cat up each day where we left him. And the cat actually started to backtrack, which is kind of crazy. And people were like, well, why would he do that? Well, he was actually starting to, I'm not going to say hunt us, but he was backtracking, trying to catch our back trail to figure out what we were. He knew there was dogs, but he couldn't quite figure out what else was there. So I think the horses and our scent was throwing him off a little bit. So we actually, on day number 5, we got this cat within probably a half a mile. I mean, we were getting really, really, really fresh tracks. Really thought on day 5 we were going to get him in a tree. Ended up getting dark. We had to leave him go, but we knew we were really starting to gain on him. So on day 6, we're probably at this point about 115 miles in total of riding and chasing this cat around. So on day 6, we finally get to the point where he bays up on this rock band. Dogs just start going freaking nuts. So we take off and haul ass trying to get up to him. Well, he hung out for about 10 or 15 minutes, jumps out. At this point, I mean, I'm devastated. I mean, my body and my legs, my rear end. I mean, I'm so physically and mentally drained from this hunt on day 6 that, it's like, I want to punch this tag so bad, but I honestly just can't wait to actually for this hunt to end. I mean, just because my body was had just taken such a beating from pounding brush and constantly riding. Probably the worst experience of the whole trip is when my guide would say, okay, we got to lead the horses up or down. Because then what that meant is I got to get off, tuck the reins in the back of my belt loop. I could tie them off or I could tuck them down in my back pocket. And if you're going downhill, you're trying to shuffle down and not fall. Cause if you fall, the horse could run you over, not intentionally, but that's just what's going to happen. And then if you're going up a really steep spot, you strap your bow on your back and you basically crawl like a bear hand over foot. And you hope you don't slide down because the horse has got to gallop to try to get its footing and keep up with you. So if you slide back into it and it steps on your foot or your ankle or your hand, I mean, you're totally screwed. So that was honestly maybe one of the scariest parts of the whole trip, because if that horse or mule steps on any part of you, I mean, it's over. I mean, you're talking broken hand, broken foot. So finally, like I said, on day 6, we get this cat in a tree and he's tired. I mean, we can see him. He's panting. He's worn out. The dogs are going nuts. Now I know, okay, it's time. And in my head, I'm walking up and I'm getting myself kind of mentally prepared for all this. And I'm like, all right, this is here's your opportunity. Like, you've busted your back. You freaking, literally, took yourself and given your body about as much of a beating as you could possibly take mentally and physically. You got to get it done right. Ended up being about 10 feet straight up. I had to hit him right in between the lower end of his shoulder blades to go up into his chest cavity where his heart and lungs are. So this was honestly the easiest part of the hunt. I mean, actually making that shot, and that point, was actually the easiest part. I mean, it was just the struggle of getting to that point, chasing this cat around, and just, the level of respect I have for, the cat hunters and their horses, their mules, their dogs. I mean, they're just freaking beasts. I mean, my guide was just a total badass. I mean, the dogs were incredible. I mean, it was one of those hunts where I'm jacked to look at my full body mountain lion on the wall every day, but I also have never once said since that hunt, man, I'd like to do that again. I mean, I probably will do it again just because I'm an idiot and I, for some reason, I like to suffer. But realistically, that's a hunt that I tell people all the time. Do not go on that hunt unless you really, really, really want a mountain lion, period. And that's just anyone that follows my writing or follows me on podcasts or social media. I'm black and white. I don't bullshit. I tell it like it is. And I'm just telling everyone out there listening, does my mountain lion look super sweet on the wall? Yes. Am I jacked that I can say I killed him? Am I jacked that I can say I killed one with a bow? Yes. But I am not going to sit here and tell you that it was fun or enjoyable, because 99.9% of that hunt, I was either getting my ass kicked by a mule, a horse, junipers, thick brush, rocks, you name it, and it whooped my ass on that trip. But I did get my mountain lion on the second to the last day of the hunt. So I'm very thankful for that. And it was an awesome experience that as a bow hunter, I grew from, because I mentally pushed myself to probably the physical and mental limit that I didn't even know I could actually push myself into and get past. So I am very grateful for that, because when hunts get tough now, I think back to that hunt and I'm like, man, if you can do that, you can do this. So, you know, when it's all said and done, it was a good hunt, but it was also a hunt that I tell people all the time, you know, hey, don't go on this unless you really, really, really want a lion.
Oh, man. That was like – so your very first day when you got knocked off the horse, were you just like
– oh, yeah.
Were you just like, oh, shit, this is – you know, I knew this was going to be tough, but this might be even worse than I thought.
I knew it was going to be tough. And I mean, I had done a lot of the research and I had talked to some guys that had been there and done it with guns. And with a gun, you can put your rifle or your shotgun or whatever you choose in a scabbard, and you have two hands to hold the reins. You don't have to worry about, you know, trying to like be a freaking ninja on the back of a horse, hold your bow, keep your balance, control the horse, duck under shit. Like, you can just focus on steering the horse, steering the mule, and you don't have to worry about your weapon. Well, with a bow, there's no place to put it, so you got to hold it. So now you're down to one hand. And I mean, I didn't realize how tough just that was going to be. And then I didn't realize how much riding we honestly were going to do. I mean, I knew it'd be a lot, but I wasn't expecting those tough miles like they were. But like I said, though, I mean, it's made me a tougher physically and mentally. It's made me a tougher bow hunter, because I know what I'm capable of and I know how hard those days were. So now when I'm on hunts by myself or I'm on a tough hunt, I think back to that stuff and I'm just like, man, you were about as miserable as you could be on some of those days with chasing that lion, but you came out and, you know, you fought through it and in the end you succeeded and it was all worth it. So I look back to that hunt a lot on recent hunts and even on future hunts. I mean, I look back to that hunt and think, wow, you know, you were able to mentally get through that. You can get through this, you know, saddle up, tighten up your jock strap, see, and let's go. You know, that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? So what was, you know, once things were just tough, you know, like they end up being on most hunts, you know, besides just saying, hey, come on, you can do this, what other kind of things were you telling yourself so that you would keep going, so that you would get back on the horse the next day or take that next step or, you know, whatever else?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just tried to really focus on the task at hand. I tried to zone in every morning on, okay, I'm out here because I want to kill a lion and I want to do it with my bow. And everyone says it's hard and everyone says, oh, it's tough and not many people can do it. And, you know, so I use that for motivation. I do a lot of freelance bow hunting writing. I knew this would be a super badass article. So that was a big motivating factor was, you know, hey, you know, do you want this story? Do you want to have an awesome piece to work on and to send to magazines? You know, at that point in time, I was literally just an up and comer. I was really, really, really scratching and digging and clawing in the industry, trying to get with some good companies and trying to get with some good publications. So I really thought about that. You know, just, man, you know, you come clear to New Mexico, you've got a lot of stuff on the line. This could be a breakthrough hunt that really kind of gets your name out there. And then I'm a competitor. I played sports my whole life. So, you know, when I feel like someone or something is telling me I can't do it or, man, this is tough, I mentally kind of put it in another gear and I go to a different level. And I just mentally in my head tell myself, like, hey, listen, you're going to do this whether you like it or not. And at the end of the day, when you do succeed at this, you're going to be thankful you did, and you're going to feel like you're on top of the world. So I just try to chase that feeling and really try to chase that adrenaline rush of knowing when I'm back at full draw and knowing how much I love that excitement and that rush after I get to release an arrow. And I mean, I just use all that stuff as motivating factors and as the driving force on, you know, on those tough hunts when I'm in those tough moments. I just think back to all that stuff that's led me to where I'm at right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think for sure, you know, sometimes, as you know, you're on a hunt and you just get smacked in the face with the reality of how tough it's really going to be, you know, and you can prepare and stuff while you're not there, but you can never prepare for everything. So awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you, you sharing your story and everything like that. Man, I really enjoyed it, and it sounded like one hell of a tough hunt for sure. You're not kidding.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's in the business of mentally and physically beating the piss out of themselves, go on a lion hunt with your bow. You'll love it. I mean, you'll thank me later, or you'll punch me in the face for telling you to do it. One of the two.
That concludes this week's segment of Stories from the Red Zone. I hope you got a few laughs and maybe learned some things to do and some things definitely not to do. Now, let's check out this week's gear review. You know, I'm impressed with this Kafaru. 150 plus pounds, this thing can handle whatever I throw at it. These Under Armour fat tires are so comfortable, but it's only been 6 months and they've already got holes. I just can't get them to hold up for me. This Valkyrie broadhead delivery system hits so hard. Pass-throughs are now expected. I gotta say it, this Sitka gear is the only camo that has lasted me longer than a year. And once again, this damn binocular harness has rotated around, putting all the pressure on the base of my neck. This S4 gear lockdown sucks. Just like that, it was broke and I was pissed. I'm not here to tear any companies down, but to simply tell the truth, because my life and my hunt depend on my gear to perform. So with that, enjoy your no holds barred, non-scripted, no bullshit gear review.
Now,
let's
get
into
the show.
All right, guys, here we are in another episode of gear review from Archery Maniacs, I guess. I don't really know where I was going with that. Anyways, in this episode, we are going to review the Sitka Mountain Gloves once again in sub-alpine. Some of the qualities that this glove offers is the glove fits very well, you know, very true to fit. I like, the glove has a very long cuff coming in here. They were able to make a much sturdier pull tab than some of their previous gloves. Like, literally, I had a pair where the very first time I ever put it on, I pulled it on like that and it ripped off. So they obviously stood behind it and got me a new one. So it was completely cool, but that was just something they've definitely upgraded. The palm is all leather, which is a big plus. This specific glove is outfitted with the Gore Windstopper. There is a little bit of insulation, but not a ton. It still gives you pretty good dexterity to grab small things, but not quite as much as maybe their Ascent glove or their Jetstream glove or something like that. It's a little bit thicker than my older pair of Jetstream gloves anyways. The
as far as the glove itself, it fits, you know, very comfortable. It's been very sturdy for me. I haven't ripped them or anything along those lines. So far the gloves have been really great for me. The weight of the pair of gloves is 4.9 ounces. And they are made out of high gauge nylon, with seamless knit liner. Now you may ask yourself, what does a seamless knit liner do? Well, the seamless knit liner makes it so, number one, there is obviously no seams on the inside, but that makes it so there's no spots rubbing on your fingers or your hands. Like, you know, when you put on a pair of leather gloves, to build fence or something along those lines, you can feel the seams on the inside of the fingers where it was knit together, and they'll sometimes rub blisters until you break the gloves in. Well, these don't have anything like that. You know, there's no seams on the inside of their knit liner, which is a big deal. Some of the product likes, they are without a doubt some of the most comfortable gloves I have ever wore. I mean, I just absolutely love them. I really do. They're an integral piece of my gear for sure. They are surprisingly waterproof. Once again, the Gore Windstopper, although not known for waterproof qualities, it amazes me how waterproof or water resistant the equipment that they produce is when it has the Gore Windstopper in it. I really like the leather palm. That allows you to get a little bit more life out of your glove. That allows you to do things that aren't going to, you know, you're not going to like grab something, you know, that would poke through most gloves because it's got leather there. Not everything, obviously, but it will keep some of the things from poking through and hitting your palm. And then I really like the length of the cuff. It's just a beneficial length that can be go over or under whatever sleeve you are wearing. The one thing that I do not like about the gloves is that there's no type of wrist fastener. And not always do I want a wrist fastener, but there's been times when I was wearing these gloves when I really wish I would have had one. So, yeah. As far as the ease of use, scale of 1 to 10, there are 10. All you do is put the damn things on and you use them. toughness, scale of 1 to 10, they are an 8. I think they're as tough as a pair of gloves can be when it's not 100% leather. Do you get what you pay for? Yes, absolutely. You know, so far out of the gloves that I have from Sitka, you know, being their, I have their Jetstream glove as well as their super, super heavy duty cold season glove. This has without a doubt been my favorite glove. So you do get what you pay for. And would you recommend to a friend? Absolutely. I would for sure recommend it to a friend. As far as purchasing one of these, the cost at Sitka is $89 and the cost at Amazon was $89 as well. So head on over to Sitka.com and get yourself a pair of the mountain gloves. You will not regret it because I absolutely love them and they are definitely always in my pack. Thanks for tuning in. And I hope you guys stick around for next week's gear review.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.